Good morning, everyone. Our meeting for the second day of February will come to order. This is the Education Innovation Policy Committee. For those in the audience who may have wandered in here and didn't know what this was going to promote today. And what we're going to promote is the wonderful things our school districts do in the area of career and technical education. And you will be amazed, members, at the direction that our districts have taken. So it's going to be a very exciting day. We do not have quorum yet. As soon as we do, then I'll interrupt for approval of the minutes. But, members, we had a task force assigned in the last session, and they have completed their work, and they're going to present this morning to us. So I'd like to call forth Troy Haugen, who is the co-chair of the task force, and CTE coordinator at Lakes County Service Cooperative. I believe joining him is Stephanie Jones, who is task force co-chair, and she's superintendent at Little Falls Community Schools. Mr. Jones, I apologize. And Paula Palmer, who's director at the Department of Career and Technical Success. So, members, I think we have a quorum. So a quorum is present. And Representative Barr, would you move approval of the minutes, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move the approval of the minutes.
Representative Barr moves approval of the January 31 minutes. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes for January 31 are approved. Welcome very much to our committee. Mr. Haugen, good to see you again, and Mr. Jones and Ms. Palmer, welcome. Please say your name for the record, and Mr. Haugen, you're probably going to begin, right?
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Troy Haugen. I am the Career and Technical Education Coordinator at Lakes Country Service Cooperative in Fergus Falls, Minnesota. I administer the Perkins Grant and CTE programs for 26 school districts in west central Minnesota.
Good morning. My name is Stephen Jones, Superintendent at Little Falls Community Schools in Little Falls, Minnesota.
Good morning. Paula Palmer, Director of College Success at the Minnesota Department of Education, and one of our programs within our division is Career and Technical Education.
Thank you very much. Mr. Haugen, do you want to proceed and lead us through the task force report?
Sure. I'm actually going to have Ms. Palmer start with kind of
very good. Ms. Palmer, please.
Chair and committee members, thank you very much for having us this morning. We're really excited to be able to talk with you today about the good work that this legislative task force did in a very, very short amount of time from the end of session last summer to December of this last year. And you see the report in front of you and a summary as well of the recommendations from the report. One thing that I would like to have as a starting point in our thinking this morning is really assuring you that this group, from our observations, did a really nice job in thinking deeply and comprehensively about this issue around and concerns around career tech ed educator licensing and access to teacher preparation. It really is a reflection of our overall teacher shortage challenge here in Minnesota and across the country. But this group did a really nice job in thinking about that there is no real simple quick fix to this. We do have a lot of flexibility. We've forged a really wonderful, over the last few years, the department has worked very closely with the Board of Teaching and the licensing department to create some flexibility for schools to be able to apply for special permissions for career tech ed for the sake of being able to sustain their programming and offer career and technical education to our students in Minnesota. But the real emphasis and a focus in the conversation was we know this is not the fix. We really wanted to look at ways that we could not only sustain and invigorate the standard and quality of instruction for students, but also to create new ways of accessing the talent pool to teach those courses and both to sustain the programs as well as grow programs for the benefit of students as well as the workforce well-being and strength of our state. So if you think about that, as the two gentlemen to my left will be able to very articulately explain the recommendations and the rationale, that was kind of that center point and lens in which this group had their discussions and formulated their recommendations. Oh, the other thing I just wanted to share as well is that this task force membership, which was a little bit unique, the legislators gave the Commissioner of Education the role of forming this task force. However, there were very specific groups that were needed to be represented in this task force, but it also gave the commissioner the ability to select individuals to serve in those capacities. So you'll see a very well-rounded group that represents both secondary and post-secondary, as well as, you know, our various layers of educators, administrators, teachers, etc.
I think we'll go directly into the recommendations.
Sure. Thank you.
Again, Troy Haugen, Lakes Country Service Cooperative co-chair with Mr. Jones. We're going to talk very briefly about each one of these recommendations, and I'll suggest that they're not in any particular order. I really ask that if you've not had the opportunity to read through the entire report, please do, because it does give a lot of background information in why the reasoning and rationale behind each one of these recommendations. So getting right into the weeds, per se, or as my grandma would say, right into the rhubarb.
This is page 11, and as Mr. Haugen said, no particular order, but the recommendations do begin on page 11. Continue.
Thank you. The first recommendation is simply just to maintain the minimum qualifications and prerequisites for licensure in administrative rule rather than placing them in statute. Certainly have an agreement that certain portions of licensure should probably become in statute, basic structures and other general items should probably belong in statute, but we ask that the specific requirements and minimum qualifications for teacher licensure remain in administrative rule by the rulemaking authority.
Our second recommendation has to do with, kind of the conversation that Ms. Palmer broached just a moment ago, and that this is not a quick fix. It's not a one-size-fits-all remedy, but it's really the start of a conversation, and certainly we know that the teacher shortage has been getting an awful lot of play in many committees and across the media here in the state of Minnesota. And so our second recommendation is to really establish an ongoing career and tech ed work group. We researched many other states that had done some things innovatively in terms of CTE licensing and found that they continue to look at this at a year-to-year and year and ongoing basis. And so we're asking our second recommendation for the consideration of an ongoing CTE education work group.
The third recommendation is probably the one that took the most amount of time to really come to some grasp and consensus around. We are requesting rule change to allow alternatives to a baccalaureate degree for current technical education licensing. Currently, the requirement is that every license in teaching, including current technical education, has an incumbent baccalaureate degree. The baccalaureate degree is not specific to any certain discipline. It is simply a baccalaureate degree. There is no requirement for it to be an education degree or a content degree. It is an any baccalaureate degree requirement. And we're finding, and after much discussion, we're realizing that that's not necessarily congruent with current technical education. There are no baccalaureate degrees for some of the technical trades. And thinking long term, we're going to have to find for people to fill our workforce needs in current technical education, it's not going to be able to come from the recent high school graduates moving into a traditional teacher prep model. There's just not enough students doing that. So one of the opportunities we need to find and think about is how do we take people from business and industry that have had business and industry experience? Oftentimes they have credentials that are not baccalaureate degree credentials, but have a significant amount of background knowledge that would be very beneficial in the K-12 setting. Now, I want to be very clear that this not using and not having a baccalaureate degree is not, we do not feel, is a lessening of the requirements. It is simply an alternative pathway that doesn't include the baccalaureate degree. Simply put, teachers to become licensed, even with the suggested rule change language, still have to have the standards of effective practice or pedagogy piece. They still have to have content knowledge, and they still have to have the CTE core background. It is not necessary. It is not the reduction of requirements. It's simply via a different method or a different way. If you pay attention to what is formerly Minsky, the University's State College and University of Minnesota State, if you look at their minimum qualifications for faculty credentialing, which is policy 3.2, I believe, the minimum qualifications for teaching at a post-secondary level does not always include a baccalaureate degree. For an instructor at a post-secondary to teach welding, per se, it requires a certificate in welding, I believe 5,000 hours, maybe 6,000 hours of industry experience, and a recency and relevancy requirement, and then some pedagogy. So that it's just not, the K-12 system is not congruent with even our post-secondary system. So it's a complex issue that we certainly would like to consider moving forward, because it does open up many opportunities for our business and industry folks. You know, the conversation with a colleague of mine walking over here is walking over and watching, looking at the top of the Capitol and watching people walk up there. Mm-hmm. And it's not long this morning, if you didn't notice. That's why people are interested in coming into teaching CTEs, because they don't have to do that anymore. Next recommendation is a simple rule change as well, although I suppose you could argue that rule changes are never simple. Right now in rule, there is in 8705.0200, institutions of higher education that are two-year are precluded from being able to offer programs for teacher prep. We're making the recommendation because our two-year colleges and colleges and universities, our two-year colleges, have the capacity to offer career and technical content programs. Our four-year universities typically do not. So our recommendation is to allow two-year colleges, Minsky colleges or Minnesota State colleges, the opportunity to obtain unit approval from the Board of Teaching to be able to offer CTE content programs. So, for example, we have no medical careers programs right now for teachers in medical careers. Typically, with what the content standards are for medical careers, not an 8710, four-year colleges and universities typically don't have content in place to provide that opportunity. Same thing with transportation careers, manufacturing careers. But our two-year colleges do have content that's probably already existing that we could tap into for program approval, for getting some teachers into the program. The next recommendation is again another thinking, using statute 122A.245, which has been in existence since 2011, we are asking for the legislature to consider providing some incentive dollars for alternative teacher prep programs. Currently, there are no alt prep programs that have been established under 245. And honestly, my personal experience is that as an agency, we're starting the process of this alt prep provider program, and it's an arduous process. But I would argue that it needs to be an arduous process. The sheer responsibility for an institution to provide teacher prep and be the recommending agency for a teacher is a heavy responsibility, and we have agencies like the service cooperatives and other nonprofits and school districts that have the capacity to offer the programming, but the capacity issue that really is difficult is that initial unit approval work. Again, it's an arduous process, which is fine, but I would say that's probably the vast majority of the reason why you probably do not have alt prep providers out there. There needs to be some upfront capacity to get to that point. Once that point is reached, I think you will find a vast majority of some institutions that would be very interested in moving forward in that route. Again, it's just an alternative. It's not the only pathway, but it is an alternative pathway.
Our sixth recommendation is to have you consider providing adequate sustainable funding for any resulting change or addition to the state agency's scope of practice. Quite frankly, you know, we have just really begun to skim the surface. As Paula said, you know, a number of people came together a number of times at our own expense to begin this process. If indeed we're looking at a change that's systemically speaking, we're talking about the need for resources to really make it a process of integrity to move itself forward. If there is indeed changes that impact the MDE or the Board of Teaching, we would certainly ask that there be consideration for the fiduciary pieces of that so that work can really proceed at a reliable rate. As I said before, with integrity. So that kind of wraps up our six recommendations. From a superintendent standpoint, if I may, I think it's imperative that we really begin some conversation about this at a deeper level. Yesterday at our school district in Little Falls Community Schools, we had an early out, an early release for teacher in-service, and we showed our staff, all 400 of us, paraprofessionals, cooks, secretaries, teachers, the film Most Likely to Succeed. I'm not sure if you're aware of that film. It's an 89-minute award-winning documentary that really talks about the need for the change in the way that we approach school, really comparing the 124-year-old system that we all grew up with versus what industry and business expect of our kids and the skill set that they need to move forward. And it really centers around a theme that you're starting to hear an awful lot about called personalized learning. And there's nothing in our system, and there has never been anything in our system, as personalized towards learning as CTE. And so as we realize that using a CTE system that existed in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, licensing-wise, and trying to use that in the 21st century is archaic at best, and it simply is not effective. And so as we look at looking to bring in personalized learning in other areas, we end up in a school system going back to what we're doing in the north wing of our building, as we call it, our CTE area, and saying that's the model that we've been using in CTE since day one. That's the most personalized learning space in our building. It's been the most effective places. Unfortunately, during tough times, what's the first place that gets cut budget-wise? CTE. And we have to get past that. We have to get to a position where not only are we budgetarily protecting our CTE programs, but we're also providing the best opportunities for staffing our CTE programs. And that's why I am so passionate about this. Troy really speaks from it from a theoretical standpoint as a CTE director, and he does a wonderful job at that. Paul is truly invested from the Minnesota Department of Ed. I, as a superintendent, get to see this every single day with the kids who go down to that end of our building. And as we look to expand that personalized model in social studies, math, English, science, and chemistry, and physics, I'm really excited to think that there's some movement here at the legislature that's going to tell our teachers and our staff, and more importantly, our communities and our parents, that there's value in the way that we're doing things. But we know that we need to change it if indeed we're getting our kids ready for success in the 21st century. That's my impetus for being a part of this, and I thank you for the opportunity to serve on this committee.
Thank you very much. So, Superintendent Jones, when students graduate Little Falls Community Schools, what's the future for those who come out of your CTE program?
Well, quite honestly, we wish that we could offer more. Kids that grow up in central Minnesota and Morrison County and the surrounding counties, a vast majority of those kids want to stay there. Yes. They want to live there. It's where they want to be. And so, you know, certainly, you know, depending upon where you're at, college prep should be a key part of it. But for Little Falls, Minnesota, quite frankly, it's career prep. It's getting these kids the skill set that when they walk out, they can either go to Central Lakes College in Brainerd for 2 years on a career path that they've already chosen by the time they're ninth or tenth grade. They know one thing when they come into the high school as a ninth grader. I want to live in Morrison County. I want to live in Little Falls. What can you do for me so I have the best chance to be a successful Morrison County resident like my dad and like my mom and grandparents before the rest of my life? That's our challenge. And so in Little Falls Community Schools, back in the educational difficult times, the gray times they call them in Little Falls, where they had a CTE staff of 14 that got cut to 3 in the 90s and in the early 2000s, it was a purging of a department that was budgetarily driven. We let down our community. Our community actually had a tractor parade in front of our school district to protest the cut of agricultural programs in our district. I've been there now, this is my fifth year. 3 years ago, we hired a second ag teacher through a grant we received through National Joint Powers Association. We didn't have the need for it at that point, but I felt that we needed to tell our community that we're serious about growing our CTE programs again. We are now able to fully sustain two ag teachers simply because we found the money to allow us to do that over a three-year period. After this year, we'll pay for it ourselves out of our budget because our kids in our community are telling us that's important for us to do. I think that model can be sustained elsewhere if we can find the opportunities to put those people in the schools. You know, it's kind of like going back to a field of dreams, right? If you build it, they will come. We put that ag teacher there and the kids came. I think that's one of the things that we can do. But if we don't have those people licensed, we can't do that. We were fortunate we stole this guy from Wisconsin and brought him over to Minnesota as our second ag teacher. They're not out there, as we all know. And so that's a challenge, Madam Chair, for us, but it's something that we really feel committed in central Minnesota that we need to pursue.
Thank you very much. Ms. Palmer. I'd like to just add that what is very unique, I come from a very traditional K-12 educator background, but what is very unique about career and technical education is we have serious competition to keep our teachers and to draw our teachers, and it's called business and industry with benefits and fringe and a nice car and get to travel, et cetera, et cetera. That is a very real but significant factor in all of this, is we have to make this field attractive to people who have an interest. A technical person who has interest in teaching. We have to think about it differently than how myself, as a baby boomer teacher coming into education, what drew me is different than today's teacher.
Representative Ward, you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This is music to my ears. I have been talking about this for about 30 years, as you said, the declining funding, the declining support for all kinds of vocational education and what I call life skills. Because it isn't just the kids who are going to be going into welding. It's everybody needing life skills. And we're not providing that anymore because of those budget cuts and the shift to everybody needs to go to a four-year college and get a degree. And my sermon on this is that we have not been serving kids. We have not been serving even our economy because we have technical people who are aging out, who don't want to be climbing around on the Capitol anymore because their knees hurt. It just doesn't work physically for them anymore. And we don't have anybody to replace them. And so I'm really with you guys. And it isn't just the rural areas that need it. I'm from the suburbs, and door knocking, I hear it every day at the doors. People recognize the shortages that we have, the needs that we have, and the fact that it's just not happening, and we need to support that. And I agree about the teachers, too. It's pretty, that's another message that we're giving people about the value of teaching and the opportunities they have to really make a difference in kids' lives. So I just want to say thank you, and let me know how I can work with you.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, panelists. I too, appreciate your presentation and the report, and this is a critical need in the district that I serve. I'm interested in how can we shorten the time frame here to make a difference, because as you discussed, in order to get more kids interested in CTE and then to go through school and to change these rules, you know, we're looking at 4 years, 6 years before we make an impact. So were there any things in your study that were out of the box that we can do immediately? And I'll just give you a couple of things that are kind of rolling around in my head. When you talked about Ms. Palmer, folks in industry and the enticement of industry, I think there's also a lot of those folks that may be looking to retire and yet aren't ready to retire and would love to be in the classroom. And is there a way that we can combine somebody that has teaching pedagogy and yet a person that has industry experience? And so things like that. Can you talk to me about that?
Yes. Ms. Palmer. So thank you. And I know Troy and Steve.
You guys are
have
smiling. And yeah, we have ideas.
Like, this is music to our ears. Because what the recommendations begin to do and set the stage for is that type of person being able to bring what they have and create differentiated on-ramps for them. So instead of having them go through the very traditional approach, they could use a portfolio to demonstrate their competency. And let's say they have everything, but they just don't have the teaching methods or the pedagogy piece. Then something like what Troy is trying to build in his area is the ability to provide that for them in a different way, either by a different provider, like a regional or community provider, because that's part of what the group obviously discussed is our geographical challenges for people to access programs. So even if we had programs in all of the post-secondary institutions, that might not be the full solution simply because of access to those programs. So by allowing a more nimble, maybe smaller entity, the ability to offer that pedagogy, then we could take exactly that person that you described and just kind of beef up their skill set and via a portfolio process then therefore have them have the ability to demonstrate that they could be licensed to teach.
Mr. Halkett.
Sure. I love the question. Thank you. This is what we're living for right now. There are immediate pieces right now with the special permission system, but as Paula referred to it earlier, they need to sunset. We need to find a permanent solution. So there are places, there are things in place. With that being said, and as Paula has kind of alluded to too, we're in a situation in West Central Minnesota, and I assume Steve is too, is that when we lose programs now, it's not because of funding. We're losing programs because we can't find teachers. So obviously we're on the same page with that. Paula, referred to multiple pathways, and one of the pieces that I'm really strongly suggesting, and it does come with a dollar figure, is that incentive for the alternative preparation programs. I've taken it upon myself as an employee of the service cooperative to start that process, but there's 24 hours in a day. I have four kids and a wife, and I want to keep the four kids and the wife. Mm-hmm. And I can't add more time to the day. So I need capacity to be able to keep moving that. So that really does make a significant difference. So is that a quick solution? No, but it's. I don't know if there are quick solutions other than outside of what we are doing within special permissions right now. Does that make sense?
Superintendent Jones.
Yeah, I'd like my opportunity too. I mean, let's all three of us talk about this because I think that there's possibilities to do this at the building level,
yes,
at the school district level. And so I'm actually working currently with Representative Crecia, and my hope is that we put together something for you to purview this legislative session on something that's happening in Region 5, and it's called Alternative Career Pathways.
Yes.
And so what we're talking about is professional development here. And so in the state of Minnesota for too long, we've only provided teachers one way to grow across the pay scale, mm-hmm. and it's been by taking college graduate credits. What we've done, and we're in year two in Region 10, and we now have 10 school districts doing this, is finding other ways to allow them to move across the pay scale, mainly through doing professional development, self-managed, self-directed projects that come back and benefit the district, the classroom, the community at large, but themselves growing as an individual. What I see from your question, madam, is the ability to have a high school student or a teacher, excuse me, who's already mastered much of the pedagogy that someone coming from industry needs, have that mentorship-mentee relationship built up. It's really sharing professional development among professionals. We've gotten to the point where the only way that we feel someone can get professional development is from higher ed. And I think that's a great pathway. But I think we tend to forget that many of our professionals are doing this every day and have done it for 15, 20, 30 years. Why can't we create a system so they become truly not only a teacher to students, but a teacher to other professionals as well? That, to me, is a quickest pathway. And I'd like to think that when Representative Christian and I put this together, that you'd have an opportunity to at least read it and question some of the things that we're trying to do in terms of professional development in Region 5.
Mm-hmm. Representative, Madam Chair, thank you. And to add to that, I think we need to, where you have the passion and you have the commitment in your communities, we need to give those local districts the flexibility to just act and do it now and remove all those barriers, because you can make a significant difference. I have people in my district that have that same passion. We can make a difference right now for those kids.
In Little Falls, in a year and a half, we have had 140 teachers put forth projects to allow themselves, instead of taking what they find as irrelevant add-on college graduate credits, and instead they're doing work for their classroom, for their students, for the community, for the district as a whole. Projects that they've always wanted to do but have never found the time, as Troy talked about. But now they're incentivized to do that. And it's amazing what a little incentive can do for someone. Suddenly they stop counting the hours and they look at the passion behind what they're doing. That's what we've unleashed, and it's pretty neat stuff.
Members, we only have a few minutes left on this task force report. So Representative Pryor, and then Representative Erdahl, and then we'll have to move on to our visitors. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, the question that was just asked by Representative Haley is what I was contemplating also, is that, and I'm thinking, people that are my age and maybe cannot no longer do the work that they've been doing in the past because it involves physical labor, if there's this need right now in the high school, and just to maybe, if you can go back and highlight, let's say the baby boomer that needs to retire out but is not ready for retirement, what do you think, if we should focus in on the barrier that's keeping them from, this different career path? And if we can focus on that for just a second, if you can highlight that from not somebody that's already in the system, but somebody's out of the system right now.
Ms. Palmer, do you want to start? Or
Thank you. I think that you hit the nail on the head is the barrier, quite frankly, could be the requirement to invest personal resources into an additional degree is not an incentive for someone at this phase in their career. So being able to access some of these alternative ways to acquire the skills or the ability to demonstrate via a portfolio or some other way is much more feasible, realistic, expedient, and quite frankly attractive to someone in more seasoned and towards the end of their career. Superintendent Jones.
The other barrier I see is us. It's systemic. We have created this fallacy that school has to happen from 8 to 3 Monday through Friday. And until we get that change in our heads, that we can offer night classes for kids, we can do Saturday morning classes, we can do things that are non-traditional, that's when we're really going to have impact. And from the adult standpoint, from the professionals in the community, again, even if a teacher prospect works from 8 to 3, why can't we create that opportunity for that class, that welding class, to happen from 5 to 9 one night a week and still provide that opportunity for our kids to have that and still create their full 1.0 FTE?
Mm-hmm. Representative Erdahl, last question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a comment, and maybe a couple comments, not a question. First of all, to the point about teachers sometimes finding it difficult to get additional degrees. In the tax bill, there is a provision to incentivize teachers to get master's degrees in their content area by offering some monetary incentive. So hopefully the tax bill passes and we have that. Also, from time to time, this committee will hear me expound a little bit about the Finnish education system. I spent a couple of weeks in Finland and visited schools, and something that they have, and I think a bit radical for us to go down this line at this time, but in ninth grade, they have two pathways. One is the career, and the other is the more academic, and they choose one pathway or the other. There's also the flexibility that they can do a dual pathway if they wish. But they put a great deal more emphasis on career education, technical education, than we do here. I'm correct in what I heard, that there's a shortage of agriculture teachers. I'm just wondering why you think that is the case. I think that in our schools are, I guess, more people in agriculture education than actually become teachers.
Yes.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Superintendent Jones.
Well, first, the biggest detriment originally was there was only one school in the state of Minnesota that offered the ag teacher degree. That's changed with Southwest Minnesota State and, I believe, Crookston, Minnesota Crookston. South Dakota State and Brookings gets an awful lot of our kids. But quite honestly, they're recruited right off the college campus to go into business as opposed to secondary education. And so it is just a matter, as Ms. Palmer stated, it's a matter of finance. And these kids come out, you know, out of the school system with $50,000 and $60,000 offers versus a $35,000 starting wage as a teacher.
Madam Chair. Ms. Palmer.
And the statistics are showing that almost every career tech ed area is in the shortage areas now, not just agriculture, but all of our career tech areas.
Thank you very much, all three of you. Very interesting. And now we're going to hear from the programs that we have in the state that hold up the career and technical success stories. And we're going to begin with ag education and call forth Sarah Dornick and Lindsay Brown, Joe Ramstead, and any others who've come here to help us understand Minnesota's agricultural education. Welcome very much. And are we going to start with you, Ms. Dornick?
Yes. Chair Erickson, members of the committee, thank you so much for having us. Again, my name is Sarah Dornick. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, or MAILSE. MAILSE was started in 1997 to promote and expand agricultural education opportunities across the state. We work with 193 agriculture, food, and natural resource programs that serve about 21,000 9 through 12 students. I should note that doesn't include if there's middle school programs, 7th and 8th, but it's about 21,000 students. Our programs are all across the state. Of course, you think of the rural schools that have agriculture around them, but we also do have programs in our urban areas, and people are surprised by that. We do have schools, ed programs in our St. Paul Public Schools, the Southwest Metro Consortium, the School of Environmental Science, and the Academy for Science and Agriculture, which is a charter school in Badness Heights. Our programs, so we have 254 agriculture teachers in the state, and they teach a wide variety of classes, which is sometimes a blessing and a curse for agriculture education. They teach everything from animal science, plant science, fisheries and wildlife, forestry, welding, small engines, food chemistry, so they kind of run the gamut of the courses. All our programs are working on what we call a three-component model, which is in the bottom corner of the handout in your packet, which we hope is the way to strengthen our programs. And we have the first component, of course, is our classroom, teaching the curriculum. The second piece is leadership development through our CTA, our Career and Technical Student Organization, which in agriculture education is FFA. And then the third piece is experiential learning, which we call through a supervised agriculture experience, which is an outside of the classroom career experience. Today, I'm really excited to share one of our programs, Mountain Lake Area High School. Lindsay Brown is seated to my right. She is actually a national outstanding young teacher this year for the Association for Career and Technical Educators, so we're really excited to have her be in Minnesota. And then after her, Joe Ramstead, who is the current Minnesota State FFA officer, will talk about his experience in a CTSO. So I'll let them take over.
Thank you, and so great to have you, Ms. Brown. Would you make sure that you move a little closer to that microphone? So that we can hear your presentation on the tape when we listen later. Welcome very much. Say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Chair Erickson. My name is Lindsay Brown from Mountain Lake, Minnesota. Members of the committee, it's very nice to be here. As Sarah said, I teach in Mountain Lake, Minnesota. We have a very diverse department there. Before I went to Mountain Lake, I taught at Chisago Lakes High School. And then I had a very different opportunity to move back to my hometown in Mountain Lake, where I've been teaching now for 4 years. And in our department, we have three agriculture teachers. We service students from 7th to 12th grade. We have a very diverse population, both economically and in their ethnicity, which is a great experience, and we get a wide range of students. With that, we teach courses to meet the needs of our students. And that means, like Sarah said, a blessing in disguise and a little bit of a curse. So my day can start with vet science and end up in the foods room cooking with my 8th grade boys. Beyond that, we have shop classes. We have our core agriculture production classes. We have consumer skills and everything in between. Beyond that, all of our teachers have some type of CASE training, which is curriculum for agriculture science educators. And we have done that in order to improve our curriculum, make it more rigor, more hands-on, and try to align our standards closely to not only agriculture but other core classes. And then beyond that, we incorporate our three-circle model by using extended time. So last night I was at the school until about 6 o'clock working with a career development team. Tuesday mornings I have a team there at 7 a.m., and it's to enhance what we do in the classroom and enhance their hands-on experiences to better prepare them for a career in the future. And then in the summer, a lot of our extended time is working with students on their supervised agriculture experience and other leadership opportunities.
Fantastic. Oh, Ms. Brown, you're a delight for us to hear from. And my goodness, your dedication to these students, so rewarding. Let's hear from our student now. Mr. Ramster, will you introduce yourself and begin?
Thank you, Chairman Erickson. So my name is Joe Ramstead, and I am currently serving as the 2016-2017 Minnesota State FFA Sentinel. Members of the committee, it is a delight to be with you all this morning. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to speak with you all today a little bit more about FFA and its role with agricultural education and what it's like being in a career technical student organization. So serving as a State Sentinel, I've had a very long journey prior to where I am today. I was in FFA for a total of 6 years. And I began agricultural education as a 9th grade student many years ago, back in 2011. And I really enjoyed my process in agricultural education. I'd like to highlight the FFA mission statement as a framework for what FFA truly is. And here in FFA, our mission statement is to develop premier leadership, personal growth, and career success through agricultural education. So that first tier is premier leadership. And FFA members truly have the opportunity to develop premier leadership in a wide variety of ways. We have camps, conferences, and conventions dedicated to allowing members to learn more about themselves and their ability to be good, articulate leaders. So back when I was a sophomore in high school, I hadn't had any real leadership experience. I wasn't a chapter officer. I wasn't very involved, and I didn't really know what leadership truly was. But that all changed when I went to my first ever leadership conference, and that was known as the State Leadership Conference for Chapter Leaders, otherwise known as SLCCL. And going to that conference really opened my eyes about what leadership truly is. And each year we have about 300 FFA members from across the state attend these leadership conferences way up north in Hackensack, Minnesota, and members get the opportunity to learn a little bit more about what they can do as FFA members to impact their world and their community. Back when I was a sophomore as well, I met someone by the name of Valerie Early. And for those of us who may not know, Valerie is a very strong leader. She developed those leadership skills through FFA. She was a chapter officer, regional president, state officer, and now she's currently serving as this year's Central Region Vice President for the national organization. She's representing over 650,000 members nationwide. That's incredible. So FFA really has the opportunity to build up our students through premier leadership. The second tier I'd like to share with you this morning is personal growth. And when I think about personal growth, I immediately think of service and serving the community as a whole. And when I was in FFA back in high school, I had the opportunity to complete a wide variety of community service activities. And I've enjoyed every single one of them, and I will never forget and cherish each and every one of them. And some of the things that our chapter did, In the fall, we'd always host a Veterans Day program and really honor those veterans who gave their time, talents, and treasures to serving our great country. And that was a very rewarding experience, being on that committee and serving those veterans in that capacity. Additionally, we also had an Adopt-a-Family program in the winter where we would raise toys, money, and food and give them to families in need during the winter. And finally, we also had a lot of public events in the springtime, so members could come in, and members of the community could come in and learn a little bit more about where their food comes from. And participating in these different community service activities opened my eyes to the value of service. And when we think about what that translates to into a career, we think of agriculture teachers, like Ms. Brown. My three agriculture teachers in high school, Veronica Ward, Ann Tosla, and Michael Miron, really shaped me into the person I am today through their service inside and outside of the classroom. Their genuine personalities and their passion for what they do each and every day really made an impact on my decision to become a high school agriculture teacher. So I'm currently a sophomore at the University of Minnesota studying agriculture education. I look forward to entering the profession with them in a couple of years as a result. I'm also excited that this summer I'm serving as an intern with the Minnesota Ag Education Leadership Council, where I will be working with the Dasico-Cato High School to advocate for agriculture education and work alongside some pretty amazing students. And finally, the third tier of our mission statement is career success. And as we heard this morning, students are able to develop career skills through career development events and supervised ag experiences. And we have 49 different SAE areas and 26 different CDE areas that students can participate in to really hone in on those career skills. And one that I'd like to highlight this morning is agriculture communications. And this contest is one of my personal favorites. Members get the opportunity to learn a little bit more about communication, but also the agriculture industry. And for those of us who know, agriculture is ever-changing. There's a lot of new policies, new technologies that are coming out, and we need to have the abilities as FFA members to communicate those changes to the general public. And in FFA, I had the opportunity to compete in that contest with two of my best friends that I will be connected with for a lifetime, Megan and Cam. And Megan, Cam, and I decided that we wanted to be dedicated and do really well in this contest. So we studied hard, we ended up getting first place at state, and then we competed at nationals in 2015 and ended up earning first there as well. So through this hard work, we were able to do well in that contest, but afterwards we decided that we weren't in it to win the contest, but rather to really gain those career technical skills that we can use for a lifetime. And whether our students are planning on going into agriculture or whether they're going into government or policy or even like news media or broadcasting, all of our career development events can allow students to develop the teamwork, communication, and technical skills that they need to be successful in a myriad of different careers. So premier leadership, personal growth, and career success are three of the key components of the National FFA Organization, and I'm proud to say that I'm a member of FFA, and I've been wearing this blue jacket for 6 years. But note that I'm only one of 11,000 FFA members in our state. There are so many more stories out there, and I'm also excited to share with you that on February 23rd, here in a few weeks, it's State FFA Day at the Capitol. So what that will happen that day is FFA members, just like myself, will be flooded around the Capitol. I'll be excited to talk with each and every one of you to share their story about agriculture and FFA, and talk about how they can cooperate a little bit more with the government and do a little bit more policy action back at home. So again, I'd like to thank you all for allowing us to speak here this morning. It's been a delight.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ramstad. You were so lucky to have the Murons in the Pacific area because we've had them testify here for probably a decade and hold up ag education in the Forest Lake area and then extend it across the state. So you were very lucky. We made some changes in credits earned through our standard science courses and math courses because of Mr. Muron, and you're very lucky to have been a part of that. And thank you so much for that presentation. Did you earn, Mr. Ramstad, college credits, or have you earned college credits, noting that your present position is a sophomore?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, I had the opportunity to earn a wide variety of credits in high school. So I completed College in the School's Animal Science. That was the only credit-based agriculture class that I completed, mainly because we had a shortage in our department. So we were unable to offer the College in the School's horticulture course, and I had to take that as a student last year. But I also earned credit through applied economics and micro and macroeconomics and some social studies courses. But as far as CTE goes, only animal science. But our high school has also been offering a wide variety of articulated courses with local community colleges. So we have some welding classes and some plant science classes that can be transferred to like HCTC and other community colleges.
Very good. Are there questions? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Ms. Dornick. Could you tell us a little bit more about the agricultural programs in the urban school district, and what do you think we could do to encourage more of these programs?
Ms. Dornick.
Great. Thank you, Chair Erickson. Representative Lee, great question. So I actually serve on the Ag Advisory for the St. Paul School District. So we have two programs, Humboldt and Highland, started, and they were really community-driven to get started. And so that's one key piece that I think to strengthen those urban areas. It really has to come from the ground up. People are unsure because they don't obviously see any crops growing in St. Paul or Minneapolis, and so why would we start an agriculture program there? And so the administrators particularly are scared about, will students actually sign up for these courses if we offer them? And so that has to come, be a groundswell from the community. I think offering courses that are of interest, you know, maybe we aren't offering the production agriculture courses, but they're offering things like vet science or companion animal instead. So finding what types of courses those students are actually going to be interested in. And then the third piece, we are finding there are some programs that are tiptoeing into it. We're finding they're maybe teaching a one-off science class for environmental science or agriculture. And so the hard part is if they're not applying for Perkins funding or CTE levy funds, they aren't an approved program. And so we don't know that it's happening, so we can't, as an organization, help those. So we need to help dig out some of those schools that are already offering kind of one-off elective courses and then try to help them build into an actual, the whole program so that they get the FFA experiences and the career exploration pieces.
Representative Lee.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you to all three of you. Outstanding presentation. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So next up we have Bloomington Career and College Academy. And I see the superintendent's in the office audience, I think. I saw the Bloomington superintendent.
I almost hit him in the car.
Welcome to our committee. And I don't know, Dr. Heistad, are you going to begin?
I think I probably will because, you got it up already.
We'll just give it a second.
I'm on the right cord here.
We'll have the page check.
Thank you. Sorry.
Well,
welcome, gentlemen, and please introduce yourselves and.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While we're getting set up,
sure.
I'll introduce myself. I'm Eric Melby. I'm the Assistant Superintendent with the Bloomington Public Schools.
Chair Erickson, I'm Dave Heistad, Director of Research in Bloomington.
Madam Chair, I'm Gary Cresson, the Director of the Bloomington Career and College Academy.
Very good. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Please begin, Mr. Melby.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And members, we do have, I believe, a handout. Do we not? Yes. It is the black and white. You will see both Mr. Cresson and Dr. Heistad's names, as well as Mr. Melby's names in the title. So very good. Thank you so much for providing us with a PowerPoint.
You're welcome. And thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for inviting us to share some information with you today. 2 years ago, Gary Cresson and some others from Bloomington Public Schools were here talking about our Career and College Academy getting off the ground, basically. And I believe we're here today to give you an update on that work, where we're at, how we're doing, and things happening around Career and College.
Yes, and thank you. We really appreciate that.
I'll start by saying thanks again, and then I'll quit saying thanks. I know it's a lot of thanks. But I want to thank you for, you know, some of the statutes that have been passed recently that help us do this work in the schools. The statute 120B11, World's Best Workforce Statute, really laid the groundwork for us to do some of this work in Bloomington schools and in other schools in Minnesota. Want to point out that the World's Best Workforce Statute really comes to life in Bloomington through what we call our Pathways to Graduation. That's a visual representation that you can see on the screens. And it really is our World's Best Workforce plan in a picture and our strategic plan in a picture. We have along the pathways all the way from preschool ready to college and career ready. Milestones that we have underneath those are actual graphics, a little more detailed than this one. But it encompasses all the parts of the World's Best Workforce, from ready for school to reading by third grade to college and career ready, as well as addressing graduation rates and steps we're taking to eliminate the achievement gap. As you all know, MDE has put out information. We have an aging population in Minnesota. 70% of jobs will require more than a high school degree by next year, I believe, is the stat. And we need to keep working on graduation rates and achievement gaps for students of color. And so the work that we're doing in Bloomington with the College and Career Academy is really working to address that. I'm going to pass the microphone for the next few slides over to Dr. Heist, who's going to talk about how we use data and inform our families and students and community on their plans.
Welcome, Dr. Heist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives, briefly, I'd like to discuss the metrics system that we put in place to monitor students' progress towards college and career readiness. We have established pathways in academics associated with getting into a four-year college, getting into a select college like the University of Minnesota, being successful in a two-year technical program, and even the kind of academic trajectory that would allow a student to get into Harvard or a highly select college. The indicators actually start in kindergarten, or actually they start in preschool, and then they go all the way up. So by the time a student is in sixth grade, we've had 5 or 6 years of assessments that give a pretty good indicator to the child and to the family whether they're on track for the vision that the student and the family has for their success. And so this example shows a student who is definitely on track to get into a four-year college and could do quite well, but at this point we would project that the student isn't on track to get into the University of Minnesota. And then the question is, what kinds of interventions would we do with a student, whether it's in mathematics or reading, to make sure that it's successful in getting to their goal. The next slide shows what we call the rainbow, where you have all the encores for Carleton, University of Minnesota, basic four-year college and two-year college. And so we established these benchmarks using our ACT test that we give to all students in 11th grade, and then working back. At the time that we did this slide, we had the plan and the explorer test that were part of the ACT suite. We established these benchmarks based on the NWA MAP test, and so we know approximately where a student needs to be on the MAP test to be on course. Now, this is not deterministic, and especially at younger ages, the fluctuation of test scores, we just say by the time you're in sixth grade and have had, five or six data points, we can predict with some certainty how you're doing. The next slide indicates that these pathways graphs are available to parents right after the students take the exam in the spring. Parents can log in with their laptops or even their handheld telephones to see what the progress is in their students. So with the help of excellent technology expertise within our district, we've been able to put that together. And then My final slide for this section talks about how we're using the SLEDS data, the State Longitudinal Education Data System, to find out what predicts success in not only getting into college, but success in terms of graduating with a degree or certificate. And we've been able to work with Normandale College to do some follow-up predictive analysis. We're finding that we not only know what kinds of test scores that you need to have to be successful, but we found out that GPA, grade point average, actually predicts better than any test, and that also attendance and social behavior are indicators that also predict success. So we provide this information to students and parents through what we call our personal growth plan, and Eric Melby will take it from here.
Thank you, thanks. Mr. Melby, and thank you, Dr. Heisted.
Thanks, Dave. The statute 120B.125 requires all students in Minnesota beginning in ninth grade to have a personalized learning plan. In Bloomington, we've Bloomingtonized it a little bit, and we call them personal growth plans. We focus our work with students and students planning around academic indicators, obviously, life and social skills, and certainly for this community, college and career planning. I also want to point out that we actually are working to start those plans in sixth grade, not ninth grade, so that we've got students, when they get into middle school, already talking with counselors and their families about what they think their path might be. Again, not that you're picking your life work at sixth grade, but it's not a bad idea to start thinking about those kind of things and getting that thought process going. How we do that is with what we call the Hub in Bloomington. It's a tool for families and students to kind of do their planning. They can do career interest inventories. They can course track and credit track and see how they're doing, make sure they're on those pathways that Dr. Heisted just talked about. They build resumes. This is just a screenshot, and it's probably a little fuzzy. I apologize. But when students and families hop onto our Hub system, they can track how they're doing. They can put information into that thing. We have designated course time in classes for students in the high school and eventually in the middle school to spend time working on their personal growth plan and doing activities that help build that personal growth plan. We think it will be a very powerful tool for students and families in their college and career planning. Really, the work we're doing in Bloomington and other folks who are doing good work across the state is trying to unify some systems here. We've got a K-12 or a pre-K through 12 system. And we've got a higher education system, and they need to work together. We need to figure out better ways to collaborate so that students eventually have good, well-paying careers. Some of the ways that we can work on the barriers between those two systems are already in place through post-secondary enrollment options and career and tech programs that you've heard about and we'll hear more about this morning. These personalized growth plans that we have in Bloomington and other schools in the state are really working to focus what students and families are planning for, putting together meaningful plans. Gary's going to talk in a minute about college and career, Career and College Academy in Bloomington, and how that can work with our post-secondary partners. And Dr. Heisted referenced the SLEDS data. We're very grateful that Dr. Heisted has access to that data. It's, I think, going to be very powerful for us and our families as we track or you know, see how students are doing when they leave us and help us plan better to help them be more successful. Now, Mr. Cresson is going to talk about the actual college and career.
Mr. Cresson, welcome.
Actually, I jumped ahead there. I'm going to try to do one more slide.
Okay.
In Bloomington, we've got Kennedy and Jefferson High Schools. I was just talking about those barriers and working with higher ed. One example of that is this year we've got programs going on through our Career and College Academy at Hennepin Technical College in Eden Prairie. So when I talk about working together with institutions of higher education, it's happening, and we're seeing some success with that already in a first-year partnership.
Mr. Cresson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when we were here 2 years ago, we talked about opening up the Career and College Academy in Bloomington, and so I'd just like to give a quick report out on the road that we've been on and where we're at. We're halfway through the second year of the Career and College Academy. The foundation of it is it's the school is actually placed in a central location in the district at the community ed, where the community ed offices are. And so students are transported there by bus from Jefferson High School and Kennedy High School. The transportation is provided for the students, and then there's a block schedule. So they're taking classes in a two-hour block. These are mostly college-level classes where they're concurrent enrollment. So they're earning high school elective credit and college credits at the same time. We're partnered with Normandale and Hennepin Technical College on these credits. This year we started four new pathways for some experiential learning. So we have the automotive pathway and the manufacturing pathway, where we had to change it up a little bit, where the students are actually bused out to Hennepin Technical College to take the courses out there. The main reason for that is it's a little further of a bus ride, but also they need to use their industry-recognized equipment in order for the students to get the best education in those areas. So they're out there half the day, and then they take the rest of their required classes at Jefferson or Kennedy. Another pathway that we started this year is cosmetology. The students earn hours towards their license, and they can earn up to 90 hours a trimester. That's a very popular pathway. A lot of students are really enjoying that. We also added a new partner, Northwestern Health Science University, where we're partnered with relaxation and massage therapy. One unique thing that we were able to do there with standard-based learning is we aligned one of their classes with the 10th grade health class. So it's another option, another way for students to get that required health credit while taking a different course that's more applied and might be more interesting to the students. The first four pathways that we started with were information technology. It's going strong. Construction, where we're partnered with the Minneapolis Building and Construction Trades. Criminal justice and law enforcement. And the health sciences. Year one, we started out with about 150 students. We're up close to 300, so we almost doubled enrollment in 1 year. When we get to the next slide, you can see, you know, it's quite the list of partners that we've already formed. Most of these partners called us. They would see a news report or hear about us from someone else, and they reached out to us. Walser Automotive is a very strategic partner in helping in the automotive pathway. Aspen Equipment, that's in Bloomington as well, is really interested in helping out in the manufacturing pathway. Not only do they help out monetarily, but they bring in guest speakers. They offer us to bring the students out to site visits so they actually see what these new manufacturing and new automotive jobs are like and how they've changed from how they were when their parents experienced manufacturing jobs.
We only have a couple more slides. I just want to point out that when you're developing a workforce development system, you know, our recommendations are, number one, create a plan for every student, so your personalized growth plan, your personalized learning plan. You have to have data to make your decisions off of. We're very lucky to have Dr. Heisted working with us and the data he's able to crunch and help make decisions with. You have to have metrics. How are you measuring your success and your student's success? You need to then create the programs, which Gary was just talking about, and you need the partners, which Gary was just talking about. You really can't do this on your own, I don't think, without all those community partners, and then it's sort of a process where you're evaluating your data, you're seeing how you're doing with your metrics, you tweak your programs, and you keep looking for partners that can work with you.
Finally, our last slide talks about how we're going to evaluate the effectiveness of the College and Career Academy. And we have enlisted two national experts in calculating return on investment. Dr. Raymond Robertson was a professor at McAllister here, and then he was offered an endowed chair at Texas A&M. He's one of the leading experts in calculating return on investment. And his colleague, Nick Marins is the two of them are working with Bloomington to get the SLED's information, which now includes workforce information. So what we're going to be able to do is to find out what the financial benefits are to the individual student, the cost benefit for the District of Bloomington and for taxpayers of Minnesota, so that they will use their expertise to build in, you know, when these students are employed, not only are they getting higher wages than comparable students, but are they using social services less? So they have access to all sorts of information that will help us do this work. I'm very excited. We have a commitment from them to work till 2022 when I'm going to retire. And so we'll have multiple evaluation reports we can bring back to this committee and share with our partners. So we probably will receive the data, the first year's data, this summer, and then we'll be able to report back successive cohorts and see how we're doing compared to a matched sample of students throughout the whole state that aren't getting the program. And so we're very excited about having that capacity. Thank you very much, and we're open for questions now.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. And we do have a question from Representative Kunish-Padin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm a teacher in Robbinsdale schools. I'm at the middle school there. I look upon your program with envy. Mm-hmm. I wish we could do that for our teachers or our students as well. I noticed in your report that you're giving the ACT at 8th grade, 10th grade, and 12th grade. Is that correct?
Dr. Heisted.
Madam Chair and Representative Kunish-Padilla, the ACT used to have an 8th grade test called Explore and a 10th grade test mm-hmm. called the Plan, but they've discontinued those assessments now. So we are relying exclusively on our MAP assessment and the MCA test to provide information on predictive. But we do give the ACT to every student in 11th grade. And then if students miss that opportunity, they could take it in 12th grade. And we have been pleased to find out that a number of students who wouldn't have maybe signed up to take the ACT now are scoring high enough to be able to get into two-year, four-year programs. And families are being able to send their children on to college that didn't expect that they could. But it also is accepted at technical colleges as well. So we're kind of looking forward to the time where the ACT can kind of be ubiquitous as a nice predictor for the future.
Representative Kunish-Padin.
And then does the district pay for the students to cover the cost of the ACT test for the students?
Yes.
Dr. Heisted.
Madam Chair and Representative Kunish-Padin, I hope I pronounced
you
that
did a great
correctly.
Job.
we do pay for the ACT for all, like Minneapolis does. But this year we're fortunate that the state has money to reimburse us. We weren't sure if it would be able to reimburse all the students, but it appears that there was enough money in that pot to reimburse this year. We don't know about future years, but work. Committed as a district that even if there aren't state funds, we will continue to offer it.
Great. I just have another one. So when you send your students to, like, Hennepin Technical Schools, is that considered part of the PSEO program?
Mr. Cresson?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative, it's a lot like PSEO, the way I can say it's these are actual transcripted college credits. That way it's PSEO. The way it's different is they're not your traditional PSEO classes, which are your college level English or math or social studies. These are the actual applied relevant coursework for the pathway. The point to that is to because the Career and College Academy is open to all students, and we know that all students learn differently, our hope is that these applied relevant classes will spark an interest in the students, and so they realize that they need to continue their education in order to be successful in that pathway, and then that leads to the career.
And then just one more, yes. Real quick. Can you tell me what the free and reduced rate is in the Bloomington School District and what percent of open enrollment you have?
Dr. Heisted?
I'll give a shot at that. I think we're approximately 60% free and reduced lunch. Oh, it's 40? Okay. It's approximately 40% of free and reduced price lunch. I'm not sure in the program itself if we have a higher rate of free and reduced lunch. We do have open enrollment, but I don't have that number, but I could get it to you. Superintendent, do you have an approximate? Gary, open enrollment?
Mr. Cresson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. The open enrollment number is, most of the open enrollment students that we get, and the number is pretty low, but the ones that we get that partake in the Bloomington Career and College Academy are the ones that come to Bloomington for our alternative program. We have a choice alternative high school, and so a lot of students choose to come there to take high school courses that way, and then they find out about BCCEA, and then because it's, you know, proximity, it's in the same building, and then they can get these college-level courses and their high school elective courses at the same time. As far as a free and reduced lunch at Bloomington Career and College Academy, that's closer to 50%.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
And will the superintendent from Bloomington please stand? He's here, and I've had meetings with him, and thank you for your innovation and your commitment to your students. This is a great partnership. Members, we have two other presentations, so we have to move on. Osseo High School, thank you very much, gentlemen, again. Thank you. What a great follow-up from our original presentation 2 years ago. You've done marvelous things. Now we have a STEM program from Osseo. Welcome. And members, we also are going to hear after this presentation from an intermediate CTE program. And did you provide us with a handout? I think you, no.
No, Madam Chair,
okay.
I did not.
Well, welcome. Good to see you again. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I apologize in advance. I'm a little under the weather, so you're going to have to deal with this voice. But my name is John Lichardi. I am a tech ed teacher at Osseo Senior High School, have been for 6 years. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce a student of mine. It was a late ad because she was working on her robot so diligently. Nice. She couldn't give me a commitment, but this is Sydney Arbogast, a senior that you'll be hearing right after I get done with my piece. Before I do begin my prepared piece, I'd just like to say that hearing testimony specifically from your task force, I can say without a doubt as a tech ed teacher, I could not agree more on the support of career and technical education. In addition to that, through the Project Lead the Way courses and the initiatives that I teach, every single time I hear about colleges, whether it's 2 to 4 year institutions, our kids in CTE have a higher rate of graduation, have a higher rate of performance than a traditional academic student. So just wanted to point that out. I really believe that what we're doing is giving kids opportunities, and there are some building block and some walls that we have to take down as CTE teachers in order to try to give these kids the opportunities within our high schools and middle schools. So in my prepared piece, thank you again. It's an honor to be representing both Osseo as well as advocate for STEM programming and education. I was here 2 years ago to testify on behalf of Osseo Senior High and Project Lead the Way in regards to our past and current opportunities that we give our young scholars. The program has gone from 1 full-year course and 22 students 6 years ago, and I am proud to say that we are now offering 3 full-year courses, all Project Lead the Way, as well as a new trimester course, and we have boast approximately 160 students, and we are growing. That growth also highlights the large increase in students of color, as well as females interested in STEM careers after high school and during their time in our building. Our PLTW program is popular and allows students the opportunity to learn as well as gain articulated college credit through many fine collegiate institutions in the nation. In addition to the growth of our PLTW program, another thing that I'm very proud to have is our programs have excelled in VEX Robotics. That has grown from 18 students 4 years ago, and now we currently boast approximately 50 participants and growing interest into the future. We have 10 teams. Everybody kind of knows robotics. When it comes to VEX Robotics, they know who Osseo is. Kind of hard to miss 50 kids coming in there, but 10 teams allow students to learn how to problem solve, work in teams, the ability to get their hands on a robot, build with their hands, use tools, and not only that, but all of our supporting fundamentals and principles learning class are directly supported by that. The popularity of robotics in Osseo has lent itself to and from our PLTW program and continues to support the STEM in interest. In the past 2 years, I've had many more graduates come to Osseo to celebrate their successes, passions, and goals that were initiated in either our robotics or our PLTW program. Our program to entice students to explore many different disciplines after they leave Osseo. With the high demand in STEM workforce in the future, as you may or may not know, I firmly believe that we are opening doors and providing well-founded individuals to pursue their interests in and enjoy their careers. As I talk with many more graduates, their testimonies are evident that we are on the right track to not only do right by the students by providing quality education with high rigor, but also broaden their understanding of what STEM and PLTW can offer to shine a light on multiple avenues that individuals can follow after high school. One of the key components to our elective program, and this is something that as a teacher and as an elective class that I find is that allows us to thrive is our articulated college credit. I cannot stress enough that having college credit option is critical to the growth of technical education, specifically in my department, in my environment. But many of the students that I have talked to express concern that they simply do not have much ability in their daily schedule to take courses of their interest due to the impression that they have to take other specific courses for college acceptance, whether that's 2 or 4 year. I can tell you without a doubt that our technology education typically take a third row seat, especially to our younger scholars in the 8th, 9th, and 10th grades. Another key component to growth is the being able to attempt to discard the impression that technical careers are the dark and dirty. We've had a lot of different manufacturing companies come to us. We've taken multiple field trips. And to shine a light and to discard that impression is very important. Our students have opportunities to tour. We've done Medtronic. We've done Olympus. We've done other items. And the feedback from the kids is, wow, I didn't know it was that cool. So those types of opportunities, I believe, are also vital to giving our kids an opportunity to discard any misconceptions. To wrap up, in continued support through legislation such as these, as well as opportunities through local companies, I truly believe that it's vital to give our future employees and employers, our students, a glimpse of what career and technical education can offer. Now I'm going to turn it over to my all-star. She's got a little bit prepared speech, and we'll take any questions or comments.
And welcome, Cindy, but will you spell your last name for us?
A-R-B-O-G-A-S-T.
And pronounce it, please.
Arbogast.
Thank you. Very good. Welcome. We're so great. We're grateful to have students all the time, but special welcome.
Thank you. Greetings, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Sydney Arbogast. I am a senior at Osseo Senior High, and my tech ed teacher asked me to speak here today, so thank you for your time. In almost 4 years of high school, I've taken a fair share of tech ed classes at Osseo. These classes have been mainly project lead the way based, because ninth grade tech ed was not offered at my junior high. This was before Osseo Senior became a four-year high school. I ended up taking an extra class because it sounded fun. I took the Introduction to Engineering Design, IED, a class that mainly focuses on 3D modeling in the high school as a 0 hour before I took the rest of my usual classes at the junior high. That first year, I learned the importance of engineering in general, how to keep an engineering notebook, brainstorm techniques, sketching and planning out ideas and projects, and using decision matrices, not to mention using a pretty cool 3D printer for some of our projects. All of the tech ed classes I've taken at Osseo have helped me decide what I want to do with my life after I graduate. Before I took the Project Lead the Way classes, I thought there might be a chance that I might possibly want to go into a STEM field, but I was still undecided. By the end of my freshman year, I was pretty sure I wanted to be an engineer or go into something in the STEM field. So I took another class called Principles of Engineering, or POE. During POE, I learned things about different engineering fields and gained mechanical knowledge to help me with robotics. I have now completed 3 full-year courses in the Project Lead the Way program and will be continuing my education at the University of North Dakota for engineering. Tech Ed is also one of the reasons I participate in our robotics club, which I have now participated in for 3 years. I have learned a lot during my time and was really happy to make it to state each year. I was first introduced to robotics in class because one of the senior high kids in my IED class was in robotics and showed us his robot, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. So my sophomore year, some friends and I joined robotics. I remember it was far from easy. Our first tournament, we could barely get the code to work, and LaCharity had to come over to help us fix it. We finally got it to work, and I was hooked on it from then on. The cool thing is that the topics we were covering in class helped us come up with workable ideas and solutions for robotics. Now mechanical advantage and gear ratios were much easier to understand and also helped me code. There are so many examples of being able to take what I've learned in class and apply it elsewhere. I look at the world much differently now. For example, I know why we have door handles on doors and the purpose of each design along with the mathematics behind it that we wouldn't normally understand. No matter where I am, I find myself looking at these man-made creations and wondering how they were made. I've learned many things in tech ed class, but one of the more important lessons is how to work with people, sometimes being the only girl in the group. Being the only girl in the room seemed really weird at first, but I was happy to know my teacher had my back. It's intimidating to first walk in and be the only girl, and it takes courage to contribute to the group. The guys don't always listen, and it's taught me to explain everything fully because if you can't back up your idea, it probably won't work. I think it's important that students, especially girls, experience tech ed because the topics covered can be solved in many different ways. It lets anyone, boy or girl, test the boundaries of what can be made to improve our quality of life. Because as students, we are the future engineers, future inventors, future scientists, the future of everything. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rosati, what is your educational background?
I have a bachelor's in technology education, a master's in educational leadership.
And were those schools in Minnesota?
Yes, ma'am. I went to St. Cloud State.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, obviously.
It's so nice to have you, and I wish that we could have you longer, but we have another presentation, and when folks take the time to come to visit us, then I feel we have to move on. But thank you so much, and best wishes to you, to our great student.
Thank you.
And our teacher, thank you. And our last presenter is from Intermediate 916, their career and technical center, Ms. Jill Stewart Keller. Welcome.
Good
morning. Please say your name for the record and begin with some information before we get the setup.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jill Stewart Keller, and I'm the proud principal of the 916 Career and Technical Education Center. I'm here today to tell you a little bit about the 916 Career Tech Center, operating as an intermediate career and technical education site.
Excellent. Please proceed.
Wonderful. You do have 3 handouts in your packet. One is a copy of
the PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm. The second being a 1-page front and back. And the final, a copy of our course guide. First, I'd like to take a moment to explain to you a little bit about the unique site that we have. The 916 Career and Technical Center has existed since 1972, and we're located on the campus of Century College in White Bear Lake. We are part of the Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate School District, and we host an award-winning staff. I'll tell you more about that later. We serve students from the northeast suburbs of the city of St. Paul, and our students have the opportunity to explore careers, earn college credit, and earn industry certifications as well. And, of course, we're preparing students for high-demand, high-wage careers. At the Career and Technical Center, our students build pathways of learning that lead to productive careers. The Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate School District currently has 14 members. Mm. We serve students hailing from as far north as Forest Lake, as far south as Cottage Grove, as far west as St. Anthony, New Brighton, and Columbia Heights, and as far east as, well, let's just say the river in Stillwater. Here's some information about the demographics of our students. This year, we have over 870 students attending our site, one of three time blocks throughout the course of the school day. They spend about two-thirds of their day at their home high school and the remaining third on campus with us. How students find us? Well, as you're probably aware, the high school experience is no longer the cookie-cutter adventure that we had when we were in high school. So we really depend on our high school counselors and others within their school settings to promote and align the right students with the right programming for the right reasons. So counselors are crucial. Students, of course, also are very popular as far as recruiting their peers, talking about their experiences, and social media is very popular as a way to share what they're learning and what they're doing in the classroom. Of course, reaching the parents can be difficult in that we don't always have access to them, but we're working hard at also developing new ways to, well, let's just say, change the trend as far as what parents expect as far as they're preparing their students for post-secondary education. So we brag that we have something for all students, and although most of our courses offer college credit, and we aim at that academic middle or above, one of our favorite stories is that student that might have been disengaged in their traditional high school setting and come to us and ignites their passion and finds their path for their future. Last year, about 70% of our students declared that they'd be attending a two-year or technical school, and 20% headed to a four-year college. We also are very connected to the SLEDS data, and find that of all of the member school districts, most of their graduates are attending Century College after graduation, more so than any other college. So we really are investing our time and energy in Century, and I need to tell you right now, Century is very interested in partnering with us as well. let's see what else. We also serve students successfully that are on IEPs and receive special education services as well. We also have award-winning staff. You met Lindsay Brown last year, National Award winner for CTE. Shelley Souls is our National Award-winning staff member for career guidance, and so we're excited to have Shelley as well as several other award winners on our staff. Our staff is small at about 30, and they come from the field. We talked earlier a little bit, or you heard earlier about some of the licensure issues. Of the 20 instructors we have, five of them are on community expert variants. So they're coming from fields where either there is not a teacher prep program or we had openings over the course of last year and we crossed our fingers hoping to find someone that was willing to come from business and industry and share their talents with our students. In some of our areas, which you'll see in the course guide, there isn't even a license that exists for their areas. In other areas, it's difficult to convince someone that's been working 20 years in a particular field to go back to school to get a teaching license or to take the teacher education series of coursework for pedagogy. So we do a great deal and pay attention in staff development to those pieces when necessary. It states, and I'll strike that, there is a portfolio review process that is, as I'm assisting our medical careers instructor right now in identifying how to go about that, a very arduous and, I'll just say for a first-year teacher, daunting portfolio review package that she needs to put together. And although she's interested, again, coming from 20 years in the field of nursing, she's looking at it and saying, why would I do that if I – and yet she loves – it just has a huge passion for what she does and is bringing some really relevant stories and connections to our classrooms. This is what's even stranger. Many of our teachers are qualified to teach at Century College, where we live, but not qualified to teach in the state of Minnesota. That's always confusing to explain to a brand new teacher. They can teach on the college side, but when it comes to holding the right license, they do not hold the MDE license on that end. So Century is happy to partner with us and offer the college credit opportunity. However, when it comes down to it and we're dealing with human resources in the state, it doesn't always match. So I'd like to take a moment to highlight a few of our programs, starting with animal science. You heard earlier about ag. The closest ag ed course we have is the animal science, and we are FFA, an FFA chapter. Animal science, if you came to our animal science building, we host over 33 different types of animals. It's just an incredibly engaging learning space for students. Students learn to care for those animals as well as some of the biological sciences and vet tech and pre-vet science types of preparation. Automotive, we have three different automotive programs, so very popular course area, and that allows us to differentiate everything from automotive dismantling, learning how to take apart a car, to auto tech with a myriad of industry certifications. Law enforcement, we currently have a law enforcement instructor that formerly was a Cottage Grove police officer. Much like you mentioned earlier, came to the point in her career where she needed to repurpose and then has shared all of her connections. Every single one of our students is mentored by someone in the law enforcement field and then in turn mentors a second grade student at Oakdale Elementary. So they're learning about mentoring through a mentor, making those connections thanks to our instructor, Mary McGuire, and then also serving as a mentor to a second grade student in Oakdale. That's pretty powerful. I'll talk in a moment about our construction occupations program. And entrepreneurship of our 18 programs, this is the only program that hosts an educator that was traditionally licensed to teach business. The rest are all coming from the industry. Very interesting as far as our staff. And then dental, medical, and EMT is our most popular pathway.
Wow.
We have three different programs and three different instructors, all with a myriad of connections, affording our students the opportunity to have experiences and clinicals at Regents Hospital, Presbyterian Homes, and doing crazy things like rappelling off walls, and auto-extrication using the jaws of life thanks to Woodbury Police and Fire. So our program benefits in general at 916 Career and Tech Center is that our students gain a competitive advantage. That's what all of our students want. They want to walk out of their schools, and what our parents want, that looking different than everyone else. They're earning college credit, industry certifications, have an experience, intern and mentorship experiences, as well as experiences in the field. They have more resources as a result of their connections through their instructors, and then, again, our partnerships with businesses and colleges. Last year alone, our students earned over 2,750 credits, 875 students earning over 2,790 credits. If you had a moment to take a snapshot of what's happening today, we're actually holding a ceremony where the students that earned the concurrent enrollment credit for semester one are being celebrated by the Century College admissions staff.
Wow.
And welcome to our family. We're happy that you're at Century College. Of course, our student stories speak for themselves. Our school board member, also Stillwater School Board member, Mike Potacek, who's in the audience here today, actually had the opportunity to meet these two students yesterday. So thank you, Mike, for being here to support me. Estrella is a student at North St. Paul High School, actually North High School. They correct me all the time. It's North High School in North St. Paul, and she's in our dental occupations program. She's currently earning 10 credits at Century College, and the Century College Dental Assisting Program is in very high demand. They actually have a waiting list. But because of the partnerships with our instructor in Century College, Estrella is actually vying for one of 10 slots that Century holds for our students. She's going to be able to complete a 24-month program in just 18 months. So she'll be out in the field, high-wage, high-demand career. If you, by the way, were to go into Village Orthodontics today, the majority of the employees there at Village Orthodontics in Wiper Lake are 916 Career and Tech grads. They're just waiting, standing in her doorway. And then there's Zach. Zach also spoke yesterday. As of this month, he is EMR, Emergency Medical Responder Certified, and excited to talk about it. He's a student at Tartan High School, and he's been with us for 2 years. The first year is part of law enforcement as a junior. The second year is part of EMT. And, again, that EMR certification, CPR, first aid, incident command and disaster training. He's walking away from high school with all of these certifications. He and Estrella are also active in our HOSA chapter, as well as Zach actually placed at state and national level for Skills USA last year. He speaks very enthusiastically about the opportunities that 916 Career and Tech Center has afforded him. However, I'll say this, we know this about high school students. That last statement is no longer correct. He shared with our school board yesterday that he's now undecided about his major. He was thinking he was going to go for paramedic, but now he's thinking broader, and so he's going to do his generals at Century College and plan to transfer to a four-year college or university after. It's pretty exciting for him, and his parents were at the school board meeting as well, and they were beaming. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. So our instructors have these strong partnerships with colleges, private sector businesses, government and nonprofit agencies, which also leads to then employment for our students, mentoring opportunities, and community service. But I want to make sure to honor your time and highlight this one program for sure, and that's our construction program, not only transforming communities, but transforming students. The city of North St. Paul identifies, let's just say, less than desirable properties, mm-hmm. and our students get the opportunity to participate in building the house from below ground up. Our instructor, Tom Spain, serves as the project manager. The city pays for all of the materials and the contractors that come out, and our students work alongside carpenters, masonry workers, electrical, heating and air, plumbing, and more to learn all about the different facets of construction. They are building a house. So the partners in this particular venture, City of North St. Paul, obviously. We've got Century College, whose interior design students choose a color palette, put out a plan for cabinetry, who passes that along to St. Paul College, whose cabinetry students then build the cabinets and install them, and then private construction businesses that come in to either donate material and time, as well as provide some of the labor when it comes to completing the home. This adds about $3 million in real estate value based on City of North St. Paul's estimates. We are in house number 24 so far in our program since its inception, and I believe this is house number 8 with the City of North St. Paul. When it comes to transferring in communities, I'll say we're also transforming lives. This house on your right was actually purchased by 2008 grad. His name is Frank. He graduated and built a home back in 2008 with our program and came back and decided that this was where he wanted to live and a home that he believed in and wanted to be a part of. Interestingly enough, this year's home, the 2016-17 home, is being built on the adjacent lot, and his sister is considering purchasing that home as well. So small town, family, you know, family environment, but it's just that full circle moment again when you think about how we're making an impact on students' lives. So, in conclusion, I would like to also say happy CTE month. It's National CTE Month in February. Mm-hmm. We've been celebrating here on day two with speaking with you, celebrating our students earning college credit. Our students tomorrow will be participating in, and every Friday, in Spirit Day, where you dress according to whatever career you're preparing for. And so it's been an exciting time. It's always an exciting time at 916 Career and Tech. And I look forward to potentially speaking to you in the future, having you out for visits and your constituents. We're always happy to show off the amazing things that are happening. And if I had a chance to come back, I'd like to bring an arborgast with me. That was wonderful. So happy CT month, and thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to share the amazing things happening at Career and Tech.
Thank you, Principal Stuart Keller. Fantastic. And I wish we had the time so you could describe to us how we could replicate this in places where we don't have a Century College or a St. Paul College. Mm-hmm. So think about that, because throughout this month and into March, we will have proposals that come forward for career and technical programs, or how to expand it mm-hmm. throughout our K-12 system. So we can use you as a great resource then, I'm sure. I know Representative Krisha and Representative Ross Peterson will both have proposals just to let members know. So he will hear from them and others too. Representative Ward, you have the last question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And very quickly, most of your students come from my districts.
Mm-hmm.
And I would very much, I've got a long list of questions, so I'd just very much like to talk to you about that and some of the other things.
Thank you, Representative Ward. And anyone, if you can catch the principal offline, that would be just great. But we'll hope to have a continuation of this kind of program. And thank you to everyone who took the time today to come to present. I think we overbooked a little bit, but we're so excited to start off Career and Technical Month with these examples. And I thank you again so very much. And members, this meeting is adjourned.